Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I'm really, really excited to have any time involving professional wrestling, but she's much, much more. And I tell you, I'm excited to welcome the program the co-founder and former CEO of WWE, Linda McMahon. Linda, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm terrific, Neil, and thanks very much for asking me to be on the show this morning and to be able to talk a little bit about my new endeavor, Women's Leadership Live.
Oh, absolutely. Excited to talk about it. A real quick question. I tell you, you have to be really proud of the family and where you've gone in your career from the professional wrestling world to see your children, how they've grown and had such great success. It's got to be a really, really proud feeling for you, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I mean, for Vince and I to have started, you know, just the two of us, and to have really built a company that's now traded on the New York Stock Exchange and seen on a global basis, and to have our children involved. I mean, Stephanie's the chief brand officer. Shane is returning as a performer for WrestleMania, and it's just lots and lots of fun. It's a lot of hard work, but they absolutely put their heart and soul into it.
So when you met Vince McMahon, did you know he was involved in the professional wrestling business when you first met him?
Well, when we first met, I was 13 and he was 16.
Oh, wow.
So he was not involved. Vince and I have really grown up together, and we actually will have our 50th wedding anniversary this August. So we were married very young, and we've been successful in both business and our personal life. So it's a real love story, and so I'm really pleased and proud of that as well.
Well, congratulations! That's fantastic, and it's great to know you guys have known each other forever. Wow, for sure.
Yeah, we really have. We met as children. As Vince says, he's still a child. But we have a wonderful life together.
Now, the reason I brought up family is I thought it's a perfect thing. When you talk about women and leadership, I think that women sometimes get the wrong thought process that they can't be leaders when they are leaders of households, they're leaders of corporations, and really to teach that how important it is to be a leader as a woman, right, Linda?
Well, it truly is, and women are clearly, you know, underrepresented in leadership. And if you think about some of the stats that, you know, women are 51% of the population. They earn the majority of college degrees, but they make about 78 cents on the dollar compared to men. They make 80% of household spending decisions, but then you step back and look at only 5% of Fortune 500 companies are led by women. And if you look at, you know, Congress, it's only 20% women. And there have been so many studies that have shown that when women are involved in C-suite levels or on corporate boards, that typically the companies, you know, do better. So I think that there's a void. I think there's a clear market. And that was really the genesis for Women's Leadership Live, you know, getting launched by my two partners and I. And, you know, our goal is Women's Leadership Live is aimed at it. We want to train women for success,
yes,
and that's however they define it. And maybe they want to be in the, you know, maybe they want to be in the C-suite.
Right.
They could want to start their own business. Maybe they have a product that they want to take to market. So, but, you know, everybody needs some community, and women especially need that little bit of, I call it, you know, wind beneath their wings. And so our organization is hopeful to be able to create that kind of an environment for them.
And that's so true. Leading them and training them for what role they want to live in their lives as leaders. And we have to teach leadership across the board in our schools. First of all, Linda, I think that that's what starts in the school environment for to encourage everyone to be leaders in some sort of way, Linda. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's even before school. I think it's at home. You know, that children, you know, boys and girls are really encouraged to be whatever they want to be, and that they can do that and to take leadership positions. But, you know, with leadership comes responsibility.
Yes.
So I think that it's a very, you know, it's a dual role when you teach leadership, because with that comes responsibility, and you have to be willing to take on that responsibility. And I think that's sometimes where women shy away a little bit. You're not afraid to take on the responsibility, but sometimes you're afraid to raise your hand and say, I am a leader, and I absolutely can take on that responsibility. And so we found that, you know, with studies, with young girls, with women. And so I think we are like other organizations who are trying to create this community of women who really have more confidence in themselves and to provide them with the tools that they can be successful leaders.
And that's important. So tell us some ways that Women's Leadership Live is helping do that. What are some of the plans for you?
Well, we are a new startup company. Mm-hmm. We have our first event May 19th through the 22nd. It's going to be in Texas.
Okay.
And it's going to be at the Omni Mandalay Hotel, Las Colinas, Texas, in Irving. We've had a great deal of support from the Chamber of Commerce there.
That's great.
So women will come to our live events. We have keynote speakers. We have breakout sessions. We have panels of experts from corporate leaders to the professional environment. We have a great program that's connected with HSN about taking a product to market. So we're going to have this first event and then help provide tools through mentoring sessions that will go beyond the conference to continue to have women engaged, learning about themselves and the tools that they need to be successful.
What tools do you feel, Linda, they need for leadership that you need to be successful, especially women? What do you think?
Well, sometimes the tools that they're looking for today are utilizing more social media.
Yes.
So it's to become proficient and experienced in using social media, as that will help them. I heard in your opening, I mean, it's Pinterest, it's Facebook,
I'm always on social media. It is what it is, for sure. And it's something people are trying to learn it still. Yeah.
Sure, and it's a direct outreach. There are some women who want to start their own business. They're entrepreneurs.
Yes.
And how do they prepare their business plans? You know, how can we direct them maybe to get sources of capital? So those are the kinds of things that we hope to be able to assist. It'll be assistance for them, because I think that's what they need. Women really have a clear mindset most of the time of where they want to go. They just sometimes don't exactly know how to get that. They need a little guidance, and they need a little help, and that's what we're looking to do.
And bringing up all these creative ideas and how women want to have the flexibility. I'm glad you brought up entrepreneurship, Linda, because they still want to have a family. They still want to be able to do things. And you saw it with the WWE, how it started and everything with you and Vince, how you did have certain flexibility at times because you were the owner of the company with Vince. So you understood that fact. So how about that important part of it is that if people choose entrepreneurship and have a great idea, to go out and do it and teach them those tools necessary, I think.
Well,
yeah.
Part of really what we're really hoping to help as when women come and they present their entrepreneurial ideas is really to help them assess whether or not it is a good idea.
Oh, that's a great point.
Because sometimes, you know, you have a business you want to get into, but you don't realize, you don't realize how important cash flow is. You don't realize how you're going to have to scale that business in order not just to sustain it, but to grow it. So all of, I think, the experience that Stacy Shefflin, one of my partners, who is the president of YBF, Your Best Friend Beauty.
Okay.
She built her company from the ground up. She's been successful on HSN and in other countries around the world. She's in England, she's in Dubai, she's in Italy, and she's in Australia. And so there are international aspects to, you know, what we've done in building a company. Clearly my perspective of taking the company and growing it from the ground up and then taking it public.
Yes.
And then Debbie Stapiano, who's a whole different cat with us. She's a former school teacher, school bus driver who put her way through college.
Oh, wow.
Drive bus. And then she was a school principal. When she retired, she looked to transition and kind of reinvent herself, and she did it through social media, and now she's a social media strategist. So we bring a lot of expertise in different fields, you know, to the table. And so that's what we hope to be able to share with the women who will come to the conference.
And also, I think one of your missions is for all women to have that opportunity and choice to be the best that they can be. You talked about women's equality and specifically the level of pay that everyone needs to have this opportunity in our country and in all over the world to be able
to. Well, that's right. You know, most every successful business leader faces setbacks. You stumble along the way a little bit. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I talk about in my sessions is that, look, I've been bankrupt before, and I know what it's like to lose everything. And so that's a very humbling experience. But you can't be afraid to take risks. And we want, you know, women to see that, you know, success is possible. And we'd like to change those stats, you know, that show that women are underrepresented in business and politics. Matter of fact, Condoleezza Rice has a great quote. She said, "We need to," and I'll read the sheet.
Okay.
"We need to move beyond the idea that girls can be leaders and create the expectation that they should be leaders." And I think that's a great note to end on.
and especially family life, teaching leadership, allowing people to have leadership roles. And I have three girls of my own, Linda, and I definitely, that's an important thing to develop that and to say, hey, you can be a leader. You can do whatever you want to do and you can accomplish whatever you want. And you just got to go out and put your mind to it to do it.
Well, you keep doing that. And when someone tells your girls that they can't do math or science or engineering, your girls will know, oh, yes, I can, if that's what they want to do.
Exactly, for sure. Okay, best place we can find information on Women's Leadership Live and more information on you, Linda. Where can we go?
Sure, they can go to womensleadershiplive.com. We have all the information about our founders and when our first event is and tells you a bit more about us. So please check out womensleadershiplive.com.
Well, Linda, thanks for coming on the show. You have a definite great business idea, and it's really going to do well because women need that help. And then once
Thank
they
you.
Do, they go all out. So thanks again for calling, and best of luck.
Thanks so much.
Take care,
bye-bye.
Linda. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I'm so excited to welcome the program celebrity from ABC's The Family, Zach Guilford. Zach, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. How's it going?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, Zach, I have been watching the previews and cannot wait to put this on my DVR list because the storyline and script is so unbelievable. And they're not letting us know what's happening. You know, from the previews that we've seen and specific episodes, we don't know what to think with this story, do we?
Nah, it's fun. You know, I mean, I think Jenna Banz, who created the show, has done a great job. And also, you know, at the beginning of the show, it's this kid who went missing 10 years ago. He shows back up. We all thought he was dead. And, you know, it's the mystery of where's he been? Who actually abducted him? Because we thought we put a guy in jail. And, you know, my character's a little suspicious if it's actually him or not. But, you know, these are things that I think you quickly start to get answers to, but it only raises more questions. It's not like, oh, my God, we're going to sit here for 12 episodes just to figure out if this is the kid or not. So the show keeps moving, and every time you figure something out, it only makes you, like, question 10 more things.
But that's what usually shows like this do to you, right, Zach? You leave you hanging every week to want to tune in and watch more. That's how it's worked. So tell us the storyline for our listeners out there that have not seen the previews, and they're definitely going to tune in this Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. But tell us specifically, just without giving away lots of the whole plot of this show.
Well, basically, you know, it kind of starts off 10 years ago. Joan Allen, who plays my mother, is, you know, running for mayor of this small town in Maine. And we're kind of campaigning for it, like a county fair or something, and our 8-year-old brother goes missing. And then the show kind of jumps forward 10 years, and he shows back up, and we thought he was dead. We put our neighbor away in jail for murdering him. And so now we're just trying to figure out, like, where's this kid been? Like, who actually abducted him? We quickly find out he's just been held in a hole for 10 years, and, you know, kind of molested for 10 years. It's a dark, dark show. And my character, who's kind of become the black sheep of the family, I think he's riddled with a bit of guilt over letting his brother be abducted, has kind of gone down the wrong path, is a bit of an alcoholic, and he's the only one who's a little questioning whether this is actually his brother or someone else kind of pretending to be him. But everyone writes me off because they think I'm just drunk all the time.
So you play this person that's the black sheep of the family that we're not going to trust you. We don't believe you. This is all great. It was a miracle. You know, the news covered it. The mayor's son returns, and everything is hunky-dory. And yet there are parts of the show that say, I don't know, even from the trailer, right? You start questioning.
Right. Yeah, you know, there's creepy stuff that goes on. You know, you see this kid watching, you know, as the audience, you see this kid watching old home videos and trying to talk like he used to talk when he was a kid and going through the house and, you know, trying to memorize where everything is, which legitimately, if you've been gone for 10 years, you might want to figure out where everything is. But it's all just, you know, there's definitely kind of a veil of, you know, as an audience, you're just, like, suspicious. Like, what is going on with this kid? I think my favorite comment someone gave, it's actually my neighbor across the street, said, "What is he, an alien?" And so it just, you know, you're definitely kind of, like, on edge, like, trying to figure out what's going on, because on the surface, everything looks glossy and pretty and perfect. This kid came home, but everything just feels off.
And, Zach, what's so great about this project is now you can really communicate with your fans on social media, and they're asking you questions. Please give us a hint, right? And that's what you're probably already getting hit up on Twitter or Facebook and people you run into. What's going to happen next? And you're like, I can't tell you. You just got to stay tuned, right?
Totally. You know, I think, like I said, you know, the great thing is it's not, I think a fault of some shows that kind of have these underlying mysteries is you just draw it out for way too long, and then by the time you get an answer, you're like, oh, okay, well, I'm bored. This, you know, you kind of, it only takes a few episodes to answer a question, but, you know, it just raises a lot more. And by the end of the show, another thing that's great is, like, you know, we don't jump the shark or anything like that, but, you know, it just gets to a whole different place. And I think, you know, it sets us up great for season two that will just be kind of like a whole different set of craziness going on.
Gotcha. Once those clues are unlocked, there's other clues to unlock, because it's not just a story about the son. It's the story about much more of this family and the variety of people and characters. And you are definitely, as the black sheep, they're probably like, what are you doing here? You're ruining everything, right? In certain ways.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's kind of fun, too. My character, this is a heavy show, and one of the fun things about being kind of the black sheep character is you get to bring a little bit of the levity to it. And, you know, as everybody kind of writes me off, I also get to be kind of the person who just doesn't quite fit in what's going on and kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. And, you know, I have some fun scenes with Liam, who plays the little brother, because, you know, I'm not holding his hand and babying him. I'm like, we've been in a hole. I guess we should teach you how to drive, you know, and taking him out to drive. And just random things that everyone else is overlooking and assimilating him. They're still kind of treating him like an 8-year-old, and I'm just jumping to treating him like a 20-year-old.
Yeah, because mom wants to do stuff to make him feel comfortable, so everything has never changed, and yet so many things have changed. And I thought Alien for sure, but you never know. To tune in. And so this week's episode again, Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, some new characters are going to develop into this, right? Correct? We're going to start seeing some new people showing up, right? To try
yeah,
to uncover.
Exactly. Which, you know, it becomes a big cast, you know, just with the family alone. You know, there's five of us and we all got our own thing going on, and that's kind of one of the great things about the show is it's a very, you know, it's set in a world of politics, and we're one of the more disjointed families you'll ever find. Like we said, I'm the black sheep of the family. I'm kind of off living in motels and doing whatever I'm doing. The mom and Allison are, you know, they're pretty attached to the hip running campaigns, and the father is like just like promoting his book and on trails and, like, you know, enjoying women as he goes along. And so we have to put on this show of, like, oh, we're this one happy family when a lot of us, like, barely even actually know each other.
All right, best place we can find information on you, Zach. We can follow you and stuff. Where can we find info on you?
You're going to have to Google me, which I don't think is too reliable. I'm not on social media.
Oh, my gosh. So you're being like the kid that disappeared for so many years. You're not. You're
yeah,
mirroring him.
I was on it for a while. I was on it for a while, and I was like, no, this is just, you know, I found myself like on Twitter too much. Like, oh, sweet. I just got more followers. It was like, you know.
Hey,
I got to spend time doing other things.
If you get away with that, that makes you mysterious, Zach. All right, well, thanks for calling again. Remember, everyone needs to tune in Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern on ABC. Take care, Zach. See ya. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out at Total Tutor, Neil Haley on Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I'm excited about this celebrities project, having an undergraduate degree in history. I'm really excited to welcome the program. Formerly from Oz and Special Units Victim Law and Order, Christopher Maloney. Christopher, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Thanks, Neil. I'm very well. How are you?
Fantastic. Now, when you heard about this project, I wonder how much of a background you had on, you know, the Underground Railroad and everything like that, and getting the opportunity to act in this.
You know, ironically enough, I was a history major.
Okay.
So, you know, I knew kind of the general time and place and how combustible it was leading up to the Civil War. You know, the Civil War just didn't come out of nothing.
No, no.
You know, the times were really, you know, people were dying over the issue of slavery. So, you know, I thought, well, it's a great place and a great moment in which to place people because it was at a time fraught with peril and uncertainty. And, you know, so I thought that had a lot going for it. And then I read what the head writers had put down on paper, and I saw how clearly defined people were and how complicated they were and how difficult the relationships that they put down were. And so I was on board after reading the first script.
Well, I watched the trailer and I was blown away. I can't wait to watch it because, I mean, just again, to think about the stories. A lot of times we see in the history books just more one person, not exactly what happened, how stressful it was to try to escape, the process of what can happen and the violence that they went through, as we knew about slaves at that time, Christopher, right?
Yeah, you know, number one, I think we've had a taste of the violence that was meted out. But, you know, hopefully this show, and I think this is where it gets very interesting, very complicated, they give you the perspective of everybody involved in the system, whether you are an abolitionist who might find himself lynched up for helping runaway blacks, whether it's the plantation owner, and his stresses and his responsibilities and the life that he's trying to carve out. And, you know, many of them were born to this way of life. So, in a sense, that's all that they knew. The house slaves versus the field slaves. The black overseers of the field slaves, you know, who were working for the white master. The slave catchers. You know, it was very rich and complicated, and I just feel as though the show does its best work because it examines everybody's moral stance in the middle of this economic system of slavery.
And that's interesting because, you know, everyone has a different perspective. We're seeing it now, Christopher, in this country with one political party completely divided in the Republican Party and even the Democratic Party, where our whole country is trying to decide where we're going next. I see not huge parallels, but some parallels in this, and I think that's a great part about it. But tell us a little bit about your character, Christopher.
My character is August Pullman. He's a man living off the land, trying to hold his family together, which is falling apart a little bit. Trying to hold his farm together, which is falling apart. So, you know, he is a man born into this world. It's the only one he knows. He's not well educated, but, you know, I just, he's a man who, feels his moral compass challenged, because he is, in a way, part of this, the system of slavery. So he's a man in conflict, I like to say.
So he's this character is going to have a moral compass in some sort of ways. It sounds like he's going to be torn at times.
Yeah, he's going to have to make decisions that I think underneath it all, you know, his conscience may not think it's the best choice, but economic situation dictates that he has to take these certain steps.
And I'm sure through social media and talking about this, a lot of people have conversations, and I'm sure it's bringing a lot of other conversations out, especially when we ever bring up that time in slavery. There's a lot of questions, aren't there, Christopher?
Yeah, you know, I didn't run into it because, you know, people haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure a lot of things will be raised.
Yes.
And I think that's a good thing. I think we... all of us that are involved in the show aspire to, at the highest level, hopefully this will be more than entertainment. And let me first and foremost say, it's really entertaining. It's very intense.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
It's action. It's a very action. This is not a history lesson. This is an action pack.
Oh, I already can tell.
Know,
yeah.
About characters that, you know, we believe you'll care about. But, we hope at a tight level, at a tight level that it'll just may possibly create a bit of a dialogue, so that you know, we can, because this issue of race in America is far from over.
It's definitely far from over, and for us both being Caucasians, we have to really understand and have empathy towards this, and to never forget that what's happened, and how quickly a country can divide in such a quick time, and that hopefully people watching this don't let history repeat itself. I'm sure, Christopher, you said you have an undergrad in history. You, just like you and I, we always look at this and say, holy cow, this reminds me of some other time, right? It's not like this, they didn't reinvent the wheel, right? For sure.
Yep.
All right. Again, it's going to be this Wednesday night, and it's going to be at 10 p.m. Eastern on WGN America. You can check your local listings for it. And best place we can find information on you, Christopher, where can we go?
WGN America. Just go to their website. They're putting out great shows. Ours is the best, in my humble opinion. There you go.
And can we follow you on Twitter as well, Christopher? Do you have a Twitter?
That would be fantastic. It's Chris_Maloney.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. Best of luck to you, and I appreciate you coming on the show. And I look forward to adding it to my DVR collection to watch it, okay?
Thanks very much.
All right. Take care, Christopher. See you later. All right. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley Facebook, LinkedIn Neil Haley, Instagram Total Tutor, Pinterest Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And the show we're going to discuss today with our guest is so interesting. I can't imagine going against a professional on specific things, especially if I am not as well versed. So I'm excited to welcome the program, the host of Food Network's series Cooks vs. Cons, Jeffrey Zakarian. Jeffrey, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic, Jeffrey. And you know, when you think about this show, it's, I guess, and people that, you know, tune into the Food Network all the time, say, I can do what these professionals do. I can do this. And this really kind of sets up that premise, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, when you go in a restaurant and everybody who does whatever they do for their life, lawyer, doctor, you know, teacher, politician, everybody wants to be a chef. It's one of those things that are just like, it's insane. I mean, you don't go into a restaurant like, you know, I want to be a doctor. I always wanted to be a doctor. It just doesn't work like that. And so everybody that enjoys food and everybody wants to be a cook, everybody wants to cook at home or cook professionally, and they all dream of being a chef one day, or they should have been a chef, or they want to be a chef. So this just plays right into it. And the show is basically a show where I host, and I have a couple of judges. We have no idea who these people are. They all claim they're chefs. We give them tests and challenges to see who actually is a chef, and we taste the food. We watch them make it. We watch their hand movements, their gestures, yeah, their nuances. We ask them questions. We try to trick them. They try to trick us. And at the end, we taste the food, and whoever has the tastiest food wins. And at that point, we say, "Who are you?" We want to know the best food first. We want to know who. So the winner is the best food, hands down. And then it's really funny who actually becomes the winner, because it's shocking. And the judges and myself change our mind at least 2 or 3 times every show, because it's just so hard to tell. And they're so good at trying to fool us.
Okay, so once there's the winner awarded, what's next? What's the next step once they win the con? The person who's not
if you're the chef and you happen to prevail, you'll win $10,000. But if you're the con artist, you win $15,000.
Oh wow!
And bragging rights.
So you guys, you're pretty much blind to this. You don't know if there was
a chef.
That is so interesting. Because
they come in, they introduce themselves, they come in, they're in chef's jackets, they introduce themselves, they all have fake backgrounds, everything, you know, it's all fake. It's a fake hobby, fake background, fake where they live. It's all made up. So we just have to figure out from their food who they are.
I find this really interesting and intriguing, and I think that's where you're excited about the show, because you are looking at this, and if a con wins... As experts, chef, you're not. I don't know what you think, right? If that happens,
well, I mean,
ever.
If the con wins, I mean, if you make delicious food and you happen to be a con, that's the problem. And then you're sort of one-upping the chef. So there's like this embarrassment going on at the same time. There's intrigue, there's mystery, and they're trying to trick us all along into who was really the chef and who was really the con. So and we have zero idea. We don't know what it is, who it is, where they come from. It's completely blind for us. And you know, we the three of us, Daphne, Graham, and myself, you know, we've been around the block. We should definitely know, but we don't. It's really hard.
And that's because have you seen in your training of people as a chef, have you seen diamonds in the rough that really have no experience? But do it on
absolutely.
Their own for fun, and they just
absolutely
seem natural.
Well, I mean, I'm sure we have mothers or grandmothers or aunts and uncles in our life that were like incredible cooks, and they did it on the side. They just happened to be amazing. But their ravioli or their pasta never tasted as good, and you can never replicate it because it was so good. It's the same for a lot of amateurs. They're very gifted chefs and they're gifted, talented cooks, and you put them in a chef's jacket. Hard to tell.
And from the contestants that are in this, only one of them is a chef, or is there more than one sometimes?
Yes. There's actually two, and you know, because there's two rounds, but it doesn't really matter because they're all, you know, wearing identical outfits. They all have identical made up stories. So you start from zero. You know, you have it's just a complete. Everything is a hoax until the very end.
Wow. And I think if the chef loses, wow, they're losing face. They're putting themselves out there by going on the show, aren't they?
They're not going to be happy back in their job.
Again, so this will be premiering Thursday, March 17th at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Food Network. And Your whole thought process in this is going to really be an entertaining show. I already could just see the different nuances of this compared to other food network competition shows, I think.
Yeah, plus it's totally unscripted. And, you know, because we don't know, we don't know who they are. We've never seen them cook, and they're all trying to fool us. It's very engaging because there's so much information to pull from as to how to tell someone is a cook or if they're a con, but they're all messing with us. So for instance, the chef might be like trying to look like a con, and the con will be trying to look like a chef, and so they're all it gets very muddy very fast. So the water is very, very dirty.
Well, it seems like it's very, very dirty, for sure. And definitely, I'm going to put this on my list of going back on the not DVR, on demand, which is so fantastic, Jeffrey, because you can catch up on so many shows, especially if you're busy people like you and I. That's the only way we catch up is by going into our list of shows to catch up. So, best place we can find information on you, is there a place we can follow you as well, Jeffrey?
Well, I have on my Instagram at GZ Chef, and Twitter and Instagram at GZ Chef.
Awesome. And remember, everyone needs to tune in Thursday, March 17th at 9 p.m. Eastern for Cooks versus Cons. And a great idea. I think it's going to be a very entertaining show. And thanks for coming on, Jeffrey, to explain everything.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Oh, you too. Take care. See you later. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. Crazy week ahead of me. Always when Friday comes, but I'm excited for my guest and to learn her story. So I'm excited to welcome the program Celebrity Holly Folger. Holly, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. We're going to kind of go to the beginning of acting. You know, I always ask that question about, do you always want to be an actress as a child? And it's always interesting to me how that leads to the conversation. So tell me, how did you get started in acting?
It was a way, honestly, for me to express myself. And I was really shy when I was little. And acting and playing a role and be able to communicate in that way was a way for me to express myself. And I think with many artists, that's kind of where they find their, you know, their form of expression. And that was mine. And, you know, I love acting.
See, interesting. So you're shy. Why were you shy?
I'm so shy.
Like, what would you think? Why were you shy as a child? Tell me.
Well, I was just this, you know, I was the middle child, and I was just, I lived very much in my imagination and, you know, with my dolls and with my, you know, we always had dogs and cats. So, I mean, I had a very, very full kind of imaginative life, emotional life. And I also, when I was, you know, when I was growing up, I was a real geeky kid. I was, you know, really skinny, and I had really bad, still do, really bad eyesight, and I had these really intense glasses and braces, and, you know, it wasn't exactly a wonderful period of my life. So I found that if I could either read or kind of resort to, you know, just kind of my imagination, it kind of took, you know, it took the burden off me for being, I don't know, the big, huge geek. So my shyness,
okay.
Yeah, my shyness kind of came from that, I think. And also just, I don't know, I was just very, very introverted as a kid. So.
Well, that's interesting. Everyone kind of grows up in that fact. So what age did you start acting?
I started acting when I was in college. I actually...
Oh, wow, okay.
I know. I mean, look, I acted, you know, in my, you know, room, like playing like... but never, you know, I did my first play when I was in college, and it was kind of a dare. Somebody dared me to audition for this play called No Exit, which, of course, every college does, and it's, you know, Jean-Paul Sartre, and it's... it's, you know, one of those exit plays, and I did it, and I will never forget being on stage and having that moment when it was just like, oh my God, I love this. And that was kind of it. That was, you know, and I switched my major, and I studied acting, and then I quit school after 2 years, and I went back to Cleveland, where I grew up, and I worked in a Shakespeare festival for a season with Tom Hanks and with, you know, a host of other. Yeah, with we were all interns that one year, and we, you know, and the interns, when you intern like in a festival like that, you, we would be the ones who would take, because it was a repertory summer theater, and you'd have to change the sets over, because I think we did 5 or 6 plays, and so you'd have one set for a couple nights, and then we would be the ones who would change the set over, who would do, you know, do all that kind of work that nobody really wants to do unless you're like in your, you know, late teens or 20s and you want to be an actor. So that's, you know, that's when I kind of, I quit school and I went and started to work as an actor. So, yeah.
So getting that experience working with Tom Hanks, or at least seeing what the business was like, you said to yourself, whatever major I'm studying, I forgot if you said your major, whatever you're studying, I'm done. And I have the same experience, Holly. I dropped out of college or took time off of college to become a professional wrestler, and it took me 5 to 6 years to go back and get my undergrad. So I
really
know exactly that bug. Yes. I said, I'm going to go. I was pro wrestling and still going to college. I was a junior in college because I was and literally I said to myself, okay, I went down south. This is what I want to do. How goofy was I? Same with you. Exactly. And then, so I said, I'm not going back. I'm going to take a couple years off. So I went down south, lived in Arkansas, Missouri, did the TV scene and the territories in pro wrestling, and then ended up coming back home and finishing up my undergrad. So
yeah.
I understand when entertainment bug gets you. So what was your family saying when you said, I'm going to drop out? What was their thought?
Oh, dear. They were just trying to figure out what I was doing. I mean, just my kind of, I'm going to go here, I'm going to go there. I'm
That's
do
the
this or that.
Middle child, right? That's what they were saying, right? That's the middle child here, right?
Yeah. My siblings all stayed in Ohio and everybody still lived there. And I left. When I was 18, I actually went to Australia for about 6 months and stayed with a friend of mine. And I did some modeling, and I was in Australia just hanging out and having a really good time. But I very much left early on when I was pretty much 18. And, you know, came back, went to college for a few years, but I was always going here and there. So my family, my parents particularly, I think they were just trying to figure out what it is I was going to do. I think sometimes my dad still worries about that, but anyway.
Okay, so the journey continues. You see how my little questions lead to very interesting ones that probably you didn't expect to have in this conversation, and how you and I have some sort of a spirit in certain ways. We both did this at one point in our careers where we decided, you know, college isn't for us. And at
yeah.
that point, and went after our dreams. I went after the dreams that I someday would be the next WWE champion, which didn't happen. And you went through yours, and you had a lot more success in your entertainment field than I did. But it always is an interesting journey to lead you to what path you end up going into. So, you see the experience, Tom Hanks, all that different things. Did Tom offer you any advice? Or did you get a chance to talk to him? Did he give you anything that kind of stuck to you when you decided to become an actress?
Oh, you know what? I mean, I remember working with Tom, and I remember, you know, I was 19, I think, and I remember how focused he was, and I remember he was also incredibly funny, and he was also real focused, and he was, you know, young. So I very much remember that, and we stayed in touch over the years, and he is truly just one of the best guys in the world. He's just, he is as nice as you think, and he's just a really good soul. So it's been really fun to watch his, just to watch him be be successful, and because he's so kind, he's just got the biggest heart. So, and you know, we are planning. I mean, we've all kept in touch somewhat loosely over the years, all those interns, and unfortunately, we were in touch a couple of months ago because one of the actresses who we worked with way back when passed away, and it was really sad. And we all kind of started emailing and Facebooking, and we're going to have a reunion in Cleveland in the summer with these interns I haven't seen for the most part in years. And I'm so excited because it was such a, you know, that time in your life when you're just starting out and you're like, oh, my God,
yeah.
Oh, my God, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And all these
yeah.
people who I haven't seen in so long, we're everywhere. You know, one is a teacher, a theater teacher, and you know, I'm out here, and another one lives in Milwaukee, and a couple in New York, and a playwright. It's just, I'm so excited. So anyway, that should be really
all right. That's a great story. So from there, you decided. So Tom's funny. You enjoyed hanging out with him, but he didn't offer any real advice. You made the decision. I'm going to go into acting. This is what I'm going to do. So did you decide first to jump? What was your next step?
Well, after that, I moved to Chicago, actually. And I always had this real issue with beauty and also with versus being an actress, being a character actress
okay.
or being a big famous movie star. And I was always kind of, you know, the big famous movie star Hollywood-y thing was always really appealing to me. So I moved to Chicago and I modeled for a while thinking, oh, I'll just be a model and then I can, you know, I can be an actress. And that it didn't actually work that way for me because I was not a successful model. And I began to study acting much more so than I had in college. And I started to, and this was a time in Chicago when it was one of the time around that Steppenwolf was started to take off in terms of becoming a huge, big, you know, kind of theater and just this kind of national treasure. And there were so many artists at that time that were all starting out, like, you know, like John Malkovich, Joan Allen, Peterson. I mean, everybody. I mean, that was the time when we were all, you know, that's when I was in Chicago, and it was the most incredible time. It was just, and everybody was doing theater. And so I started to do theater, and I started to study. And then I had done a couple plays with a theater company called the Remains Theater Company, whose members include Bill Peterson, Amy Morton, who was nominated for a Tony a couple years ago, Ted Levine, who's been in gobs of stuff. I mean, so that was my theater company, and we were kind of, you know, we had this beautiful theater space. And so I started working in the theater in Chicago, and that was a time when a lot of casting directors were coming to Chicago, and I started to get TV work. And and I started to do a lot of television in Chicago, and then when I kind of transitioned to see how Los Angeles would be, it was really easy for me because I had done so much stuff in Chicago.
Yes.
So I came out to LA and I started working a lot in television and primarily on.
So what was the comedy to start with?
Oh, let's see. My very first sitcom I ever did was a show called Doctor Doctor, and it was with an actor named Matt Frewer. And after that, I got a show called 30 Something for a couple seasons.
Oh yeah, can we talk a little about 30 Something? My wife is a huge
sure.
fan, so I'm gonna have to bring up
show,
that person.
It?
You're gonna have to. We're Facebook friends. If you have a picture of who you played in there, and you could just send it as a message to me.
Oh sure,
that'd be great because my wife will get a kick
sure.
out of that. That's one of her favorite shows of all time. Is 30 Something?
Oh, it was so fun.
Really.
It was like, yeah, it was really fun. I got hired. They had that whole thing where Elliot and Michael worked in the ad agency, and I was one of the ad agency people in the next office. So they had that whole kind of story arc with it that they wanted to do with Elliot and Michael. And they had such amazing directors, and they had, I mean, and that was a really tight cast, and they were,
yeah.
you know, it was really, really fun to work on. And after that, then I got a show called Anything But Love, which was a show I did with Jamie
okay.
Lee Curtis.
Can I jump
in
right back with 30 something? I have one more question on 30 something.
Oh,
so,
sure.
What did your character worked in the ad agency, and what was the role? Like, did you have relationships with the working in the ad agency for a couple of seasons? What was it like?
Yeah, my character's name was Hollis Amato, and she and I think my partner's name in the show was Angel, And we had, like, Elliot and Michael were the two, you know, two ad guys. They were like a team. And Angel and I were a team. And we had offices that sort of butted up against one another, you know, with kind of a window in between. And it was, ultimately, I get fired. I mean, my last show was when Michael fires me. Because but I remember Joe Doherty, that was sort of his, he was one of the producers, and he had worked in the ad industry for a while. And so, you know, he knew that industry. So it was really interesting to work with him. And some of the people I worked with, okay, I worked with Stanley Tucci for two episodes. He would never in a trillion years remember me. But, you know, over the years, when you work as an actor and you do guest stars or you do shows or you do whatever, you work with a lot of people. And you start to look back and you're like, oh, my God, that was so fun. I worked with him and him and him. But Stanley Tucci was in the show for a couple episodes. And I think David Clennon played this great character. He played, I think his name was Miles. Can't remember. But he was this really wonderful, creepy, weird character that was so brilliant. I think he was nominated for some Emmys for that role. But it was great fun. It was
interesting when you talk about 30-something because it really spoke to us compared to today. I wasn't a fan of it. My wife was, and she cracks me up, but she tells me about it all the time, and she forced me to watch episodes. And I think it was like 5 or 6 years ago, and I said, you know, I like this show now. But when it was out, I really didn't. Just to tell you my age, Holly, I'm 43. But I'm like, you know, my wife was just a real, real huge fan of the show. And so that jumps to everything. And I know you're talking about your next journey from there. Tell us about that now. So that was, you said Anything But Love, right?
Yeah, then I did the show called Anything But Love with Jamie Lee Curtis. And it was possibly one of the most fun things I'd ever done. It was such a great cast. And Jamie's just, she's just great. She's great fun. And you know, there we were, all of us, me, Jamie, Richard Lewis, Ann Magnuson, an actor named Richard Frank, who has since passed away, and an actor named, I can't remember his name. That's terrible. Because,
that's okay.
Anyways, but it was truly fun. And we laughed so much. It was the best cast. It was the most generous cast. You know, just some. It's hard sometimes when you're in a show and being generous with other people. If you don't have you know, a pretty strong sense of yourself, it's tough. And Jamie was just you know, generous and lovely and fun. And it was, I had such a great time doing that show. I was so sad when it ended. That was because I was real lucky to work on some really wonderful things with really, really great people. Yeah. So
it seems like it. I mean, it's interesting, the storylines and the things. And I try to pull up your Google images to find who you are because you look much different now with the long, and you had the short hair, right? Right? Correct?
Short hair? Uh-huh.
I was trying to picture you saying, I want to put this as the photo, but I said, is that really her? So you got to go back. You have to do a lot of Throwback Thursday pics on your Facebook. That would really get people a kick on that stuff, you know. You should. I don't know if you do it. I mean, I was just trying to just kind of scroll through it once we became friends, and I'm like, I'm not doing the Throwback Thursday stuff. And I said, that would be perfect because some of your stories are fantastic. So you go from that show on to Ellen, right? Is that the next thing?
Correct. Yep.
And talk about two rock stars in Tom Hanks and Ellen. Can you believe that? Working with both of them and how gigantic those two are in Hollywood.
I remember when we got that show. I mean, initially that show started off, that show went through a couple, a few incarnations, but initially it was called These Friends of Mine. And it was so funny. The guy who created the show with Neil Marlins and Carol Black, who were the creators of The Wonder Years, David Rosenthal, he used to be a PA for production assistant for Anything But Love. And what PAs do is kind of stand around and do, you know, run around and copy scripts. And I always loved David. He was just sweet and funny, and he was really talented. And one of the things on Anything But Love was they always tried to give, you know, a lot of everybody a chance to do other things. So David began to write scripts for the creator of the show, Peter Noah. And David then became, you know, he was a really good writer. And then he got a deal with Neil Marlins and Carol Black to create the show that Ellen was going to do. And so they created a show. It was right around the time when Friends came out, too. And so there were all, you know how sometimes certain ideas pop up and you see all sorts of sort of similar things. But ours was, it was me, Maggie Wheeler, Ellen, and Ari Gross, and it was called These Friends of Mine, and it was about this group of friends. And you know, I'll never forget when all of us went to lunch, and we, I mean, because you don't know each other, and you're sort of, you know, you're supposed to play best friends, but you're kind of getting to know each other.
I remember
just going to a couple, you know, dinners and lunches and with the cast and, you know, just kind of just talking about, okay, we're going to do this. And I, you know, I love this idea about the show. So it was so exciting. It really was. And I remember we premiered, I think we were ABC, and I think we premiered after Seinfeld. And it was just, I mean, it was really cool. It really was. And then the show
went
through.
Your biggest role, Anything But Love, or like notable role, was that, or Anything But Love, about the same?
Probably about the same, because I just did one season on Ellen, and then, you know, then they replaced, or I don't know what the, you know, they recast pretty much the whole show. So, you know, so, but it was, for the time being, it was, yeah, it was great fun. I still get, you know, it was really, I mean, it was just an amazing experience.
Very
it really was.
Seems like
it,
yeah.
Yeah.
You stay in touch with Ellen still?
Not so much. Sometimes when you, you know, and the same with Jamie, like I'll see every now and again, I will, you know, with talk on Facebook or email or whatever, because she had worked with a very close friend of mine on Scream Queens, who's the DP and director of American Horror Story. So anyway, so it's like, you know, you kind of move on with your life, but every now and again, you'll be like, oh, and I know so-and-so and so-and-so. So it's a little bit like that, where you sort of kind of come in and out of one another's lives, which is really kind of cool. Yeah.
And when you go to different Hollywood stuff, you see each other. And then you reminisce for a second or two. So, Jamie Lee, it's interesting. I talked to somebody that had a small role, one of the starring roles for one of the shows in the sorority, and I can't remember her name. It's not terrible. I interviewed so many people, but she mentioned Jamie Lee, and I talked about how horror movies were so much better in the 80s. I'm still, 80s and 90s were the best for horror movies. The way it's gone now, it's so different. Oh, think about it. Freddy. All that. It's fantastic. Okay, so from Ellen, where do you go from there? What would you say next notable stuff we could talk about?
I did these Disney movies, and in the meantime, right around that time is when I became a stepmother to two little children, you know, a three-year-old and a five-year-old whose mom had passed away, I became a mom instantaneously. So during that time, I was acting, but I also took on this other role. So my attention was greatly much more focused on them. But in that time, I did these movies for the Disney Channel called Xenon Girl of the 21st Century. And they were incredibly successful. And that actually is the thing I get recognized for the most. And it's funny.
Oh, really?
They were hugely. They were, I think, for the Disney Channel, one of the most successful, and we did three. But the funny thing now is that I still get recognized, but the kids who watch those movies are now in their 20s, right? So that's
you think my daughters would like those movies? Because we never saw those.
They're wonderful. Yeah. Oh, my God, they're wonderful. And they play on the Disney Channel all the time. And it was based on a book, the movies called Xenon Girl of the 21st Century, and it's about this little girl who lives on a space station, and she's sort of like, kind of this hero. She's just sort of really smart, and